You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
What's up, downers? Welcome back to the show. Today I'm going to talk to a guy named Chris Spangle, who hosts a podcast called We Are Libertarians. Now, my views often line up with people tell me I'm a libertarian, essentially, and then my views line up there, but I don't identify as a libertarian because I don't identify as anything political. I call myself a political agnostic or apolitical, I suppose you would call it, and typically don't participate in politics. But I find libertarian thought, the alternative ideas, and the way that they think kind of compelling. And this guy that I'm going to talk to today, Chris, is no exception. He's smart and got a lot of good thoughts, and we agree a lot about some stuff and debate, you know, the necessity of political activity in itself. And I found it kind of fascinating, and I think that you will too. Now, let me tell you about a healthy snack too before we get to the episode. I'm going to tell you about That's It. Now, That's It are fruit bars. And I have a stack of them sitting here in my office. And let me tell you, I eat them all the time when I'm just sitting around, and all of a sudden I look over, I say, I think I'm hungry. I think I need a snack. What am I going to do? Go out and eat? Go eat lunch, do something like that. No, I skip a lot of meals. Sometimes I'm not paying attention and I realize I need some food and I want to eat something healthy. And you know, something that is healthy is fruit. And That's It fruit bars are made out of only fruit. Their ingredients are fruit and fruit. That's it. Hence the name. I think they're great. My daughter loves them. When she comes to my office, she says, Daddy, can I have one of those blueberry fruit bars? And of course, the answer is yes. And yes, the blueberry ones are my favorite ones. And these things are great. They're really taking off. And I think there's something really important about just having simple ingredients because you know what it is. So most people believe and feel that fruit is healthy and it's something they want in their diet and they don't get enough of. I think some of the barrier to that is often that you have to get it, you have to buy it, you have to peel it, you have to prepare it. It goes bad if you don't eat it in a couple of days. And so those can be the barriers to eating fruit. And then other fruit products have added sugars and they're processed and have all these other ingredients. But That's It. Fruit bars do not. They're a good source of fiber. There's no sugar added. They have big flavor. They're non-GMO. They're vegan. They're great. They're kosher. I mean, they're as simple as it sounds. Fruit plus fruit. That is it. That's it. So you can go to thatsitfruit.com and you can use my promo code down and you'll get 10% off of what you order there. You know what? They sell these things in Whole Foods, Starbucks, CVS. I've seen them all over the place. So go out and pick one. Next time you see it, you probably already seen it. Next time you see it, pick one up, eat it. You'll know that I'm telling the truth. Then come back, go to their website, thatsitfruit.com, and use my promo code down and order you some, order you a box of them. If you can eat fruit, then you can eat this. There's really nothing else to it. Go to thatsitfruit.com, enter the promo code down, and get 10% off today. And you guys know this show is also sponsored by Broadcast Supply Worldwide. That's BSWUSA.com. Get your microphones there. Get your cables there. Get your interfaces there. Anything you use for podcasting and most stuff for audio recording, that's where I get it. That's where you should get it. BSWUSA.com. Also, promo code down gets you 10% off there. Now, their prices are already as good as anybody's out there. Their shipping is great. Their customer service is unbelievable. You can call them and ask them any question you want about the gear, how to set it up or how it works. They will help you. You get your stuff shipped. They even have free shipping on most orders over $99, and you're going to get 10% off from using my promo code there. So I'm just telling you about products and services here that are good that you should use. Of course, you eat healthy snacks. Of course, you need audio gear, microphones, that kind of thing. And you need to get those from Broadcast Supply Worldwide, BSWUSA.com, and use the promo code down. You'll both be helping yourself, getting a deal, and supporting this show. All right, let's talk to Chris.
Break it down, Dada.
Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down.
Chris Spangle, thank you for coming on the podcast today. I'm always glad to get to talk to somebody who has, you know, libertarian thoughts or alternative thoughts, really, is what it is. Libertarian's a weird group, and we can get into that, but it's almost become meaningless in the way other terms have, you know, Republican, Democrat, evangelical, libertarian. You know, these things run amok and could be crazy. But your show is called We Are Libertarian, so you do kind of self-identify with that. And I want to thank Mark LaFay for introducing us. Mark LaFay is a manager. He used to be in the music business a lot. He doesn't as much anymore. But he lives down the street from our drummer in Emory, Dave, like three houses down. I saw him the other day. He told me about you and your show, which I've checked out and I think is really good. So thanks to Mark for the intro. And he said that you're a fan of the Bad Christian podcast, which I appreciate too. So
thank you. Stuff. Yeah, I love the show. I mean, it is. We do something very similar for politics. It's sort of an irreverent look at our political movement as well as society as a whole. Mm-hmm. And so when I found Bad Christian about a year ago, I was like, oh, wow, this is great. I love the show. I think you guys are awesome. And hopefully one day We Are Libertarians will have the ability to hire people and have the production value that you guys have.
So it's
great to see podcasters do it for a living and make something out of it because it's encouraging to the whole industry.
It really is special. I mean, I do feel very lucky. I don't quite do podcasting as a full-time thing, but it is my primary thing now. I could say that pretty clearly. That is my main job is podcasting. And to be specific, I think I've kind of got it organized in my brain now, and there's different ways of measuring it to say that the Bad Christian podcast is probably at a level higher than Emory is, or maybe even was to some degree. Like it works. It's catching on. And I don't know what to attribute that to, being like you said, that it's really us just kind of processing thought out loud. It's not nearly as difficult as writing an album or anything like that, but it seems to be speaking to people in a niche. I don't know if it's a niche or a broad thing, but there's something going on where all the information you get from CNN, ESPN, everything, every single day, there's more and more people that seem to kind of wake up and go, wait a second, I don't, what is all this? And they go find individual people that are processing authentically and honestly, which is what I think you do and what we do. So,
yeah, I think that's a huge part of it. I think that it is a thirst and a hunger for authenticity, and mm-hmm. the millennial generation especially, that is so key for us. We want that authenticity. And I think that in the Christian world, there is such a lack of authenticity. Mm-hmm. And I was at a moment in my own spiritual walk, and I became a Christian at 18 after being an atheist and a Buddhist and all that stuff. And I'm a terrible Christian, and it kind of grieved me, and I felt a lot of guilt. And then I kind of found the show, and I just heard guys, and I've especially identified a lot with Joey, mm-hmm. and some of what he's gone through. And so it's great to kind of hear yourself mirrored and go, hey, somebody else is going through the same bad stuff or the tough stuff or these questions that I'm going through. And it doesn't mean that you are less of, just because you're not perfect or you're not doing these things, you can still be an authentic Christian and you can mm-hmm. still find your people. And I think what both of our podcasts have done have authentically found followers that didn't feel like they fit in their particular mm-hmm. movements and given them a home. And that's a very powerful thing. I mean, the key to humanity is storytelling and identifying with others and connecting. And podcasting is such an... I work for a nationally syndicated radio show, and I just see the power of radio every single day. And my hobby is the podcast. And audio is just this great format that gets into your ears in an intimate way mm-hmm. that video and other things can't do. And it bonds our listeners with each other in a great way. And it's been a pleasure to not only do what I've done, it's created a great social circle for me, but also given other people the ability to identify with people who think the same way they do, but are working things out. We're not experts. Mm-hmm. You know, we know a lot, and we work hard on the show, but we don't pretend that we know everything or have all the answers, and that's what you guys do too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing that people are turned off by, is like the people that are predictable or have a side and hold it and come with well-supported info. We're in a place of where information is just under so much scrutiny. It's like you almost automatically assume that whenever you hear something, before you even read the article, you see who wrote the article, and then you already are deciding, are you going to disagree with it? And not only are you disagree with it, just the fact that they wrote it, you've already start to form in your head counter information, or at least assume that there's counter information that would invalidate this information. And that's a little bit freaky to me that that's the state we're in. They say they say they put all these test news articles out there where the headline said this, this, and this, and then the body after the first paragraph looked normal, and then after that they started putting in gibberish, and those articles were still getting shared tons and tons of times. So people would share it just based on the headline, Hillary Clinton, blah, 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 share the thing, and they're sharing it out, and it was just a planted article to prove the point that people aren't reading the articles anyway. They're just sharing and echoing and doing the stuff, not even considering the information presented. It's crazy.
PJ O'Rourke is a libertarian thinker, used to run National Lampoon, a great author, and he recently said that we've built a world where everybody is broadcasting but nobody is conversing. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of what's going on. I mean, even though, you know, we are conversing on the podcast now, we're still kind of broadcasting. And I noticed in my own life, especially since I got a smartphone in 2010, my world has kind of gone from having conversations with people and asking them about their life to discover more about them, to connect with them on an intimate level, to now I'm waiting for you to stop talking so I can tell you what I think about the subject you're talking about.
That's right.
You know, and that's a very different thing, and that's a very troubling sign, and that is something that has been fostered by social media because of algorithms and artificial intelligence. You know, you don't have to be political. You don't ever have to seek out any political information if you want to be apolitical. If you're a libertarian, you never have to go and read a progressive or a Republican site if you don't want to. And so, therefore, you're just trying to validate what you believe as opposed to trying to understand the world and come to terms with what it is to be human and what it is to live in this world in a harmonious way. Mm-hmm. And that is killing intellectualism. And that is the foundation of Western society and what has made Western society and the world a greater place to live over the last several hundred years since the Reformation, is that idea that you want to understand the world, and you have to do that by talking to people, and we're in kind of a scary situation where people just aren't listening to each other.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit scared of some things. Now, you caught me the other day, you mentioned to me before we started that you heard me on Bad Christians, you know, with some concern and doom and gloom, and I had to tell you that's a little out of character for me on the broad spectrum. I'm relatively skeptical, and that's my normal operating procedure. But in general, I believe the world is awesome. I believe that humans are awesome. I believe in Project Human. I think society is getting better. To me, it's very clear how it works, and that we have this hardware that's our bodies, and then we have the operating system, which is like society, and we've been improving it for a really, really long time, and that seems to be the trend. But there are times when it gets wild and out of hand, and there's major crashes. And I do feel like the tone of what the country or world is like right now is very volatile. So I don't know if everything is guided. I don't know. I mean, historically, there's no proof that there's any protection from bad stuff happening in waves. I think World War I or II could have happened or not happened. I don't think they were inevitable or guided. You know, it's just, it feels to me right now like we could be in a volatile state, starting with just people not listening and turning the thing where people think people that have bad ideas are bad people. That freaks me out. It really does. Like, you can have bad idea. A good person can have a bad idea, but we seem to want to take that a whole nother level, and it's fuck them, you know, no matter what. That scares me.
Absolutely. And it is when everybody kind of retreats into their tribe, and then that creates warring tribes. And part of what we've tried to do since the Reformation is kind of get out of that.
Yeah.
And stop trying to go to war with each other. And in a lot of ways, we've been very successful across the world. We have far less deadly wars now than we did. We have, you know, I live better as a lower middle class single guy living in an apartment.
the definition of libertarian, right?
Yeah. It's not my mom's basement.
No, it's not a basement, but yeah, step up from that.
I live a better life than King Henry VIII, who was the most powerful man on earth at one point, because I have access to healthcare and variety of food, and I have pepper. You know, I mean, it's we take for granted a lot of the great things that society has achieved, the human race has achieved, and that has all come about because of cooperation. That has come about because we as human beings are always trying to improve the species and give the next generation a better world to live in, and we do it both consciously and unconsciously. And I think that there are a lot of dangers right now. You do have, you look at nuclear waste, you look at nuclear weapons, that is a pestilence that could immediately eradicate the entire human race mm-hmm. or the majority of us in a very significant way. You have climate change, which whether or not you think that is real, I don't know how much man contributed to it, but it's undeniable to see glaciers melting, and we have the American dollar could crash at any moment.
Well, look, an asteroid could hit us. I mean, that doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. You don't have to be that ideological, or it doesn't mean anything. I mean, I'm in this tension of thinking, oh, clearly it seems like we're on this ever evolving, improving project, but at the same time, I don't know. It could be meaningless. An asteroid hit us next, but sure. Either way, it seems like in the current moment, we may be taking some steps backwards is my sense.
We can never be fatalistic about it. That's the mm-hmm. difference. You don't want to be fatalistic about it because you don't know. And I am I'm a person who's in my emotional life a very codependent person who's worked through a lot of that. And so my thinking is naturally geared towards catastrophizing. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm in such a good mood today, like I'm gonna get in a car wreck on the way home. It's mm-hmm. all gonna be over, you know. And sometimes I think that we, in our global thinking, think that way as well. That of course we're just gonna have another world war instead of thinking, what can I personally do to get involved and be a good member of my community, my mm-hmm. country, the world, and advocate things that increase cooperation, that increase the next generation's success. You know, and that's why I'm a libertarian. I'm not a libertarian because I'm greedy. I'm a libertarian because I feel that the foundational principles of libertarianism are people cooperating, and capitalism has been a 5,000-year leap in human society over the last couple hundred years. It's undeniable that when people have financial interest in success, in their own personal interest in success, then everybody cooperates at a much faster rate. And it's why we have moved so quickly as a species over these last couple hundred years, because mm-hmm. freedom of not only information, but also monetary freedom, freedom of movement, freedom from the scourge of war. These things have allowed human beings to live a better life. And we have to stop and take a step back and examine our history and examine our future and examine what we're doing now, examine why we are successful and what is working, and then start ending the things that don't work. Mm-hmm. And libertarians take a step back and go, is it working for Americans that we are the policemen of the world? In my opinion, no, it isn't. Why are we still in Afghanistan and Iraq? Why are we sending billions of dollars every single day over to other countries to support their military so they can then, you know, start a Cold War with North and South Korea? I mean, there are a lot of things that we're doing that we never stop and ask, is the basic premise of this a good idea? Mm-hmm. And that's what libertarians try to do, is we try to say human beings flourish best when there's cooperation between people. And what government does is it tries to force everybody into tribal groups and war over those issues.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Gay marriage is a great example. In my opinion, gay marriage did more to destroy the evangelical church than anything else.
Because
Because the fight for gay marriage, by making it something where we feel we have to defend our values, and we were in an uphill battle against a postmodern culture, the other side was able to then come in and say, these are hateful people. Mm-hmm. When, as Christians, we know that that is not even remotely the truth. Of course, there are some. I've been to some churches where I'm just like, okay, well, I'm not down for killing gays. All right, I'm out of here. But it forced us into certain boxes because we felt like, well, if my church friends are going to this rally, I better go too. And mm-hmm. we've used
Do you think politics and the, see that, I don't know. There's a few things there. First of all, I'm super good with gay marriage. You know, I don't know if you're not, that's fine if you're not. But to me, I don't see any reason to get involved in stuff like that. Wouldn't that be a libertarian thing? Like just let them do it.
I'm,
just do whatever.
I'm, Yeah, I'm 100% for gay marriage.
Yeah,
I believe that the government shouldn't be involved in marriage. It got it involved 100 years ago to force blacks and whites from not marrying.
Yeah, okay.
And that's the point, is that government is force, and it's forcing people into boxes.
It's a monopoly on force, isn't that the way to say it?
Exactly,
it's a monopoly on violence. They're the only ones that can, you know, really use force or violence. And the thing that you hit on there is that... I don't know if it's a trick, and I don't know who's behind the trick exactly. And I don't even think most people in government, like anywhere, relatively well-meaning. It's just the system is corruptive by nature. And so the trick there is setting up some false dichotomy in the first place where you get people to fight with each other and then look to these outside people as the savior. That's what's wrong with government. That's what government seeks to do. And at a small enough level, it's useful and necessary. And of course, I'm no anarchist or nothing like that, but we've passed way past the critical mass, a point where the government's, you know, involuntary idea of politics and government and the parties is to try to convey to people that they disagree and they need protection and they need me to protect them. The government wants to think of itself like the mob. I mean, like, you need protection from us. You need us to solve your problems. You need us to make sure of everything. And therefore, of course, we're going to take your money. We need your money. Now, we need your money for these people. We need your money to do this. We need this money for ourselves, of course. But really, it's just trying to get you dependent on them and for things that you don't need to be dependent on them. And it's so destructive. I don't care about it on a political level, but it's so destructive, I think, on the individual level, to take the focus off you working on you. Your time, that's why... Sorry, I'm out there ranting now, but that's why I don't identify as political or libertarian or anything else, because I think the whole exercise is futile. I think everybody should turn it off and stop paying attention to politics. Focus on yourself and you'll be fine.
You're 100% a libertarian. I don't know what you're talking. I mean, you may not be a libertarian party member. You may not believe that politics is the answer to the solution, but what you just said is libertarian inherently. Because libertarians, again, we have a podcast out there called The Cost, and it basically talks about the human toll of government policy, because libertarians and conservatives love to talk figures and tax cuts and all that stuff, but they never go into what government actually does to people on an individual soul-crushing basis. And if you go back and you listen to 144 of We Are Libertarians, part of this series, where it's a woman who was a victim of domestic violence, there's no way not to be anti-government at the end of that, because or episode 91, where people have where you have a woman who goes to jail for selling her boyfriend's OxyContin because he forced her at the point of a gun to do so. She got 16 years and died in prison. And because the government didn't have the ability to take care of her in a proper way. Is this the kind of system that you want to send your tax dollars to? Because if you don't, you can stand up and say no. A great illustration of standing up and saying no and questioning the entire premise of government is the movie on Showtime called The Free State of Jones with Matthew McConaughey. And you're exactly right. Government destroys individuals through perverse incentives. It isn't that politicians are bad people. They're well-meaning people. It's that they create systems of unintentionally of perverse incentives.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever read Freakonomics or watched that documentary, it kind of goes into the theory of incentive economics, where you have 100 people watching this girl that we covered dying in prison. But none of these 100 people stood up and said, this is wrong, somebody should help her, because they didn't want to lose their jobs. And so bureaucracy becomes the thing that is protected, as opposed to the individual's life.
The point of the bureaucracy is.
And then somebody like Woody, who's going out and telling his daughter's story, can't get covered on the news because nobody wants to hear about a dead criminal. Criminals don't play on the news.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants to go lobby for changing the entire system with this company that provides poor health care, because I don't know, politicians will figure out, maybe I'll send an email to my legislature. People don't get engaged because they don't feel they have to, and they have no incentive to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Christians, Muslims, and Jews, part of what we believe is that we are to help the poor, that we are to help those in need, that those are those that are less fortunate. And by just pushing everything off to the government and saying, I cut a check every April 15th, they can take care of it, I vote for the right people, is not taking individual responsibility for your fellow human. And it disconnects you. And so when you support a charity, you watch where your dollar goes. And if that charity fails, then it can quickly dry up because people stop donating and a new one can start because people are so pissed off about that last one that they start a new effective charity. And that is how the market works. The market is supposed to crash things and rebuild it very quickly, whereas government, it doesn't matter how ineffective DCS and how many children are being raped and murdered at the hands of bad parents. DCS, in most people's eyes, is a need as opposed to a detriment to the lives and safety of children because people don't get involved and get information about it, and the news won't cover it because it won't sell. Mm-hmm. So that's the power of independent media like We Are Libertarians and podcasting, you know, or in Bad Christian's case, talking about, you know, what's going on in some of these mega churches. Is this a healthy movement for us to have? You need independent media and the freedom of information to start questioning these big institutions and going, is this good for individuals, for communities, and us as a whole?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's easy to see now. It's starting to become clear that institutions are not our heroes as we thought that they were. But that's, you know, it might be a little cliche and easy to say I'm anti every institution. It's not that. It's just that I'm in the zone of my eyes have kind of been open to it. And if you pay attention, it's not conspiratorial. You just notice that when things get big enough, at some point they cross a limit and they need to, you know, the big question is, can they be fixed, though? And so to me, it seems like most of them cannot be fixed and thus you should, as much as possible, not depend on them and just count on them to do what they do. So I'm maybe a little more fatalistic than you, and you can correct me on that. That's why I don't say I'm a libertarian, because I don't vote for anybody. I don't vote. I ain't never voted. I mean, and I might vote in the future, but I count my non-voting as political voice. That's my voice is, y'all do whatever y'all got to do. I'm assuming you're going to screw me. I know you're not doing a great job. Anyway, let me know what I owe you. I'll pay it. I'm going to put my head down and figure out what I got to do to improve myself, to improve those around me, to share information. I'll be doing my thing. Y'all, in the meanwhile, will be arguing about stuff that doesn't matter at all.
Yeah. You sound exactly like a friend of mine who hosts an anarchist podcast called The Lava
Flow. I'm not an
Flow.
Anarchist, though.
But what you just said exactly what Roger said to me on a recent podcast we were on together, in that we're just not buying into any of that. We're not getting involved in any of that. I'm going to focus on taking care of my community.
Yeah.
And
I think you can do more if everybody would avoid politics. I think we'd make the world way better, way faster. That's what I'm saying.
And I think that if you espoused the type of government system that is outlined in the Constitution, you would be considered an anarchist in this day and age, because we've gone so far towards 1984. And I think that you are 100%, that is a very libertarian thought, in that I don't want the government intervening overseas. I don't want the government intervening in my financial life. I don't want the government intervening in my love life. I don't want the government intervening because it's not good at it. It's not effective.
Right.
And anybody who makes the argument that it is just wrong. Like it's people who are stepping outside of this false paradigm of the two-party system. I advocate that people go vote. I vote mostly Libertarian Party. I voted since I become a Libertarian 10 years ago. I've voted in every election for all three parties. I've never voted straight ticket Libertarian. I voted for everybody because I'm looking at it on an individual level. I vote because I want my protest to be heard. I think that it is an important piece of free speech to go in and participate in democracy and to register your no vote against the entire system. But I'm under no illusions that, you know, Gary Johnson was going to win the presidential election and that he was going to get elected president. Because I think that if you look at Donald Trump, let's say a third party did get elected in 2020, look at how effective Donald Trump has been against the deep state. The deep state is identified as the establishment, the permanent Washington, the media class, the agencies like the FBI, the EPA, the lobbyists, the culture that is created around Washington, D.C., what Trump has labeled the swamp. They have never given Trump a chance, and I'm not pro-Trump in any way, shape, or form as a moral agent or as a politician in his policies. I think he's done some good things and some mostly incompetent things. But he's been largely ineffective and immediately attacked because he is not part of that system.
Right.
So they'll do anything they can to impeach this guy and get him out of the office because Mike Pence is kind of a squish that they can push around and he's really one of them. And so, yeah, we are in a lot of ways past the point of reform in government institutions.
That's what I feel like. It's past the point of reform.
Yeah, because government has, they have more guns than us. That's why the Second Amendment is so important, is that we have the right. I mean, again, Free State of Jones was just such an illustration. I saw it last week and watched it 3 days in a row because it was just like, oh man, these Confederate soldiers and runaway slaves took over half of Mississippi or a quarter of Mississippi because they had guns and they just said, no, we're not going to participate in the Civil War anymore and you can't just go around and lynch us anymore. And they fought for their freedom and they were able to do that because of their Second Amendment right. And, you know, I don't think that we're at a point where we're at a Civil War moment, but we are certainly in 1830 territory where we have serious discussions in this country that are going on, and the two sides that we have allowed ourselves to get into won't reconcile with each other in any way, shape, or form.
Aren't looking to.
They aren't looking to. It's a virtue to not work with the other side.
Right.
And so I think as Americans, when 20% of America votes and participates in the political process, the other 80% of us need to stand up and say, well, we're 80% of the country. We don't have to tolerate this behavior. But most people have bought into the fear of, if I don't vote for Trump, then Clinton will get in, and that's much worse. As opposed
to, but that's just fear mongering on both sides.
Exactly,
like,
right.
I mean, that's all it is. There's not anything meaningful about that. Do you think my choice to not vote publicly? I'm saying this. I don't vote. I don't It's non-participant. It's, what do they call it when you didn't want to go to Vietnam? A conscientious objector.
Yes,
I mean,
right.
Is that? Do you find that a valid viewpoint of mine?
It is not a choice that I would make. It's not a choice that I do make. I have a lot of friends who do make that same choice. Mm. I do think that there is a statement in that 80% of people that do not vote. But I also think that you are allowing your voice not to be heard as effectively as if you did vote for a third party, or if you started your own party, or if you donated to a candidate that was closer to your ideology. I would guess that, you know, if you are anywhere in America, that if you get involved at politics at the local level with any one of the four political parties and independents, you know, I would say that now we have two major, which we know, Republicans, Democrats, two minor, Green and Libertarians, and then we have independent candidates and smaller independent parties. There's going to be a candidate that does resonate with you at some level, and they don't have money or help or donors.
But I see that all as secondary, though. I see the whole government process and politics of being all they're doing. I'm a culturalist. I mean, I don't know if that's a term, but I believe in culture. I believe you create culture. I believe that entertainment and politics will reflect that. Now, politicians are more like leeches. They just wait and see what the culture's doing, and then they're opportunistically play to that. So if you want to affect your culture and make it be what you want it to be, you operate in that sphere, and then the politicians don't vote the guy in he's not going to change anything. He's only responding to what we're already liking, wanting, populism, socialism, whatever it is that we're into. They're just responding to that in an opportunistic way anyway. So you can have more impact in culture than you can have in politics, certainly with some vote. And I'll give you an example all the way down to a detail, and this will sound selfish. Now, in the broad sense, I believe that about all of culture and everything. I believe that about philanthropy, everything. But this is just a personal one. I've heard last night, they sent a story out, said the Seattle City Council voted to start instituting a state income tax or city income tax, whatever it is. Income tax, like 3% on the wealthy. Now, we have a super high sales tax and super high property tax. So we've all, in Washington, it's great that you don't have income tax, but you certainly pay the taxes in these other ways. And now in Seattle, they're passing a income tax that's going to be contested in court and blah, blah, blah. And it's only for people that make $250,000 or above, rich people, they say, which I certainly don't make that much money, but that's still horrific, I think. And of course, if that works, it'll come on down, then it'll come on down, and eventually there'll be income tax in me and everybody else too. That's how that's going to go. Now, I have two choices. I can fight that. I can study it. I can go to the court. I can write my senator or whatever. Or I can just freaking make more money, figure it out, figure out how to take care of myself. Of course they're going to do that. Of course they're going to come for my money. So I'll be better off spending my time focusing on me and what I'm going to do and how to pay my taxes right and how to be effective and deciding where I, you know, whatever it is. But I don't feel like I'm going to change that. That's just what they're going to do. That's already assumed. So I'm not playing their game. I don't want to waste 200 hours lobbying and showing up at meetings. And that's a waste of my time. It's not pragmatic.
Here's yes and no in some cases. But here, it's all a gamble, okay? And I'll tell you why I agree and why I don't think that you're, by stepping out, you're doing a podcast, okay? I used to, let me start at the beginning. I used to be the executive director of the Libertarian Party of Indiana. So from 2008 to 2012, I was the sole full-time executive director of Indiana's third largest political party. And my entire job was going around organizing people to get involved in politics and direct action politics. And time and time and time again, I saw people go to their county council meetings or their city council meetings and stop mega projects that would have cost hundreds of millions of dollars because five people showed up and they brought a video camera with them and they were going to document it. And mm-hmm. the local media is so underfunded that when citizen journalists start getting active and start saying, we're going to expose what you're doing, they run for the hills because most politicians are cowards.
Okay.
So I would say be open to the idea of direct action politics, because I think that in certain cases you will find something that you're passionate about, and that when the time comes, you can get involved and you know how to get involved and you've kind of flexed those muscles. But I don't think that it's mandatory. I went on then to work at a think tank, essentially, and I was the marketing guy for a think tank. And I saw the direct action and the policy side of it just didn't really fit. And that's why I started We Are Libertarians, and why I continue to do it is because I think that it's much better to weaponize this material in viral ways through the podcast, through video content, through Facebook posts, and feed people information. It's a much better use of my talents and skills mm-hmm. than it is to go out and spend time at a city council meeting, very much like you. You're clearly doing something. You're having somebody on your podcast that, mm-hmm. you know, you're taking a risk. There are going to be people of all political spectrums who are going to go, I'm not going to listen to a libertarian. They're losers, whatever. But you're interested in hearing that information and wanting to have that discussion. And that is important. You're feeding your audience with information just like we do at We Are Libertarians.
Mm-hmm.
And so because it's been more effective for me. I've created more libertarians and gotten more people active in direct action politics by myself stepping out of that and encouraging people to do it with a microphone as opposed to picking up the phone and calling them. So you are active, but I would just say you're mostly right, but be open to the idea of getting involved, because mm-hmm. so few people get involved in their local ordinances and local city yep. council races.
I think the local's more important. I understand
that. It absolutely is.
You have more potential for influence there, of course.
Let's not pretend that calling your congressman does anything, you know, but they do listen to that stuff sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, libertarians are pragmatic in the way they think about stuff, so I'm with them there. I just feel like I'm slightly more pragmatic. It's all like, what you said there about showing up with citizen journalists and stuff like that can work, but that's not exactly, if I had to pick that apart, that's not exactly what I'm talking about, because that's exposing corruption. That's great. Go do that. Feel free. Show up. Get the information out. That part we need. Good journalism in that realm or whatever. But I'm just saying the active participation. I'm saying if everybody took the time they put into reading politics, watching CNN, discussing policy at high levels or whatever, if you just took that type of all that energy and just put it into production from an economic mm-hmm. standpoint, it would be better for everybody. The tide would rise of the country. We have a system. The government is going to manage the crap that they have monopolies and control over. Fine. That's a necessary evil that I'm just going to deal with. But yeah. us hemming and hawing about it is a waste of time. You know?
Yeah. And listen, a lot of, like, television journalism is a joke. Like, if you're watching TV news, you are watching propaganda. Like, if you are going on CNN and expecting to get that day's news, you're being completely fooled.
It's just entertainment.
It is entertainment. Empty. That's exactly right.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know,
so don't fool yourself into thinking you're doing something of any consequence by absorbing it and parroting it back. It's a waste of everybody's time.
If you have been posting about Russia nonstop for 6 months, you are a useful idiot. You are not somebody who is spreading good information. You are, again, it's just what the communists call a useful idiot. You are somebody who is helping the movement. Only the movement happens to be the deep state of the United States that buys into the paradigm that they control us, as opposed to going out and thinking independently for yourself. I mean, there's good journalism going on. There's good news to be had. But TV news is not where that takes place.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, no, I agree. And so in general, I'll put another spin on it. I'm kind of pro USA and government. We need them. It's fine. Again, I just consider it a necessary evil. They're going to take 30% or whatever it is they're going to take. That's just the way it is. It's still better than anything else I'm aware of. And I believe you should support our president, when it's Obama, Trump, whatever. I think you should support them. I think they won. I think they win fair and square. I think it is what it is. That is the system. I mean, this is how it goes. So it's not that I'm anti them in some crazy sense. I just think it's a distraction from things that actually matter. When I think culture, people, stuff, you can really do it. I think the only thing that's important about a president, I know there's, you know, I'm using hyperbolic language here. If people can't figure that out, whatever. But I feel like one of the most important qualities of the president is just his vibe. Obama's my favorite president ever because he was so chill, I would say. And that's right. It ends that with me. I think he looked good. I think he made everybody pretty calm. I made everybody feel pretty good. Good job. That's your only job as far as I'm concerned. As far as Trump, not good because it makes us look bad. It makes everybody nervous and top down like an alpha dog that's mentally ill. Now everybody's going insane and that's not good for us. So other than that, I hope no president does anything ever. Just look good, give a good speech, smile, make the rest of the world feel like we're okay. Keep our shit stable so we can do our work here. That's all we need.
So a lot of what you just said is kind of where I identify with you. And what I was saying about that episode, it was the beginning of the Elevation Church episode on Bad Christian, where you kind of talk about how, you know, you just were so close, but there's still an element I'm just going to take half the red pill. Okay. I'm just going to take half of this. I'm kind of there, but I want my friends to like me, so I'm going to say that we don't want to be anarchists. We want some government.
Yeah.
I think that we should honor the president. But then, like, you then go on to say, all of what I just said was just so you will continue to like me and listen to me and respect me, but I don't believe any of it. You know, and so I think that do a lot of that in political language is that we are so worried about what people,
that's
you know,
true.
We want people to like us. As
can you blame them though? Because I mean, golly, no. You say the wrong thing, you should get attacked. It's crazy.
It's why Trump's going to probably win re-election. Trump has tapped into the authenticity that Americans are craving. He says whatever he says, and it's all horrible stuff. It's kind of it's a little bit of a distraction to keep people. The CNN meme, the GIF that he tweeted, was only to keep people from paying attention to the fact that healthcare failed. He used the media to turn the discussion from his failure into something that the public doesn't care about, which is his antics, because we know that. That's a known quantity with Trump. And so, for me to stand up and say, I like Neil Gorsuch. I thought he was a good pick for the Supreme Court. That's about the only thing that I think Trump has done. I think he's done some good things. I think that his lack of focus on foreign affairs is good, but I think his temperament is bad. And like having a genuine, authentic evaluation of any politician or the political process is oftentimes met with, you know, just this scorn. So we just go, I'm not an anarchist. I think we just step away. You know, like we kind of go to platitudes and we kind of go to cliches as opposed to just saying exactly what we want to say.
Which is what though? Are you anarchist? Do you think we need to knock the government off or something?
I'm basically a minarchist. So I believe in a constitutional republic. I believe in the constitution that the founders created, a government that allows for the rule of law, that allows free markets, that allows the protection of the states by not a standing military, but when we need a military, we have one. And it's a very, very small government. It's a very limited government, and it's very far from what we have now. The United States government looks absolutely nothing like the Constitution as it was intended. So I'm not anti-government. I believe that we should have mm-hmm. public courts, that force needs to be centralized in some location. I've had some of the best libertarian minds in the world explain private courts to me in an anarchic society, and I don't buy it. I don't get it. I'm sorry. It's just not going to work. But I think that when we have a government like we have now, we're dangerously close to a system in, you know, like the things that Edward Snowden exposed to what Orwell wrote in 1984.
And I think
with a major catastrophe, we could very quickly slip into 1984 with some sort of catastrophe, as you talked about earlier. And so I do my best to go out and talk to people and do things like this, to go out and say, hey, you don't have to equivocate. You don't have to like buy into the narrative. You can think differently, you know? And I think that politically, you're going to probably get to a place where you're at spiritually, where you have found the courage to come out and say these mega churches are bad. Not bad, but there's problems with these mega churches. You know, that these, what Bad Christian has done, I think, for a lot of people, for me especially, like I was really struggling a lot. And I don't know if I talked about this earlier or what, but like it made me realize like, oh, there are serious problems, and kind of everything that I've felt, I haven't been able to articulate, and these guys articulated it. And so I think you're going to get to a place where you kind of stop worrying about other people's, the societal acceptance that we all kind of seek. You're going to get there politically, and you're just going to go, you know, this government sucks. I'm an American. I love America. I'm going to participate in the process, but I'm going to hate 99% of it, and I'm not afraid to say it.
Yeah. Well, but it's past the point of reform. So what's the point? We're not going to fix it, right?
Yeah.
I just don't see the point.
Well, and that's the hard part. And that's something that conservatives and libertarians have not done a great job of articulating, is how do we start moving backwards? How do we start heading the other way? And that's the scary part, is once you get 50% of your population depends on some government paycheck, be it welfare or...
Is that true?
Yes.
So, oh, gosh.
Between soldiers and government bureaucrats and city bureaucrats and welfare, more than half. So once you have over half your population that has the vested interest and incentive in keeping the system going, we're kind of where we're heading. We're not heading towards collapse, in my opinion. We're heading towards a zombie state, sort of like Japan.
Maybe so.
Yeah, Japan has over the last 30 years been a zombie state where they have stagflation and they just kind of limp along without any growth. But that's bad, because that puts pressure, and it's why you have the wealthier class maintaining income and the lower class going on welfare, and the middle class is shrinking, because the money supply isn't moving around all the different generations and all the different, you know, classes.
Yeah. So that makes me just think about unintended consequence, though. So again, it's like, you don't know where this, I mean, we just don't, you don't know where this is going. Like maybe it goes so bad that everybody gets on welfare, and then we stumble into some kind of universal basic income, and it's good and we didn't know, or we do it and it's the worst thing ever. Who knows? I mean, my sense is it's stable. It's been good. Quit messing it up. Leave it alone. Nobody touch anything. Stop. We'll just ride this out. I mean, it's probably, it's got, things have to change. Nothing stays the same. But can't we just try to keep this thing under control here? Just ride it out. Just deal with it. Pay the man his taxes. Let him steal your money. Whatever. It's bad. But if we rock the boat too much, we might all fall out, I'm afraid.
Who thought that we all hated healthcare, and we've talked about reforming healthcare since FDR or Woodrow Wilson or whatever. I think it was actually Teddy Roosevelt who started talking about a nationalized healthcare system. And we finally get it, and that's worse than what we had before. Now the Republicans are going to make that even worse. It's like, just stop helping.
Just stop. Don't touch anything.
And so we're kind of getting there in the people that we elect, because so many people are stepping outside of the system that you're starting to get the just these worthless people into Congress you know, anybody that watches Nancy Pelosi, you're just like, who on the planet does she represent other than herself? Like, just a bizarre right. person. You know, there's nothing authentic about it. And so, the unintended consequences are huge. I mean, you look at something like student debt, that's part of the reason that we are going to... We could end up with a class system very easily because of student
definitely.
Debt.
Yeah.
Because in a country that was founded on the lack of a class system, you have now, you know, I'm 33, and so I turned 18 2 days before 9/11, you mm-hmm. know, and so my generation, and I don't know how old you are.
38 next month.
All right, so we're similar in similar places, but you know the kind of the middle to upper millennials went to college and racked up all this debt, and then have not really found the jobs that they needed because boomers aren't retiring, and they don't have the ability to start businesses to earn mm-hmm. to create new wealth because they have so much student debt, and so when the government took over the backing of student debt, all these colleges went, "Hey, let's start helping people with you know." Colleges
absolutely.
Said, "Government's backing it. Raise tuition. Let's start building new buildings." And now you know it's on the back of $100,000 worth of student debt for a lot of people,
right.
And so what that ends up doing is the people who were wealthy stay wealthy, and the people who are lower and middle class never become wealthy because they didn't have the ability or the freedom to start a small business. And so that is a very indirect way of stealing wealth from our society because we wanted everybody to have free college.
Right. Well, I just mean unintended consequence all the way around. It's just you can't really even possibly calculate what's going to happen by doing this, eliminating that, changing. I mean, even putting a candidate in you like, you don't know what, I mean, the chain reaction, you just don't really know. But our biggest danger is the real danger that we do have as far as government is concerned is having a disaster, a terrorist attack, a war, a natural disaster, and then all that is going to be is a mega tightening of the grip of all the things they control to a whole nother level. It will be loss of liberty. It will be, you know, more taxes. It will be more government control. I mean, and we will cede it willingly as soon as something mega goes wrong. So there's no way around that.
Yeah, that's a look at what Snowden released. And then the discussion isn't about the PRISM program. It's about whether or not Edward Snowden is a traitor to our country.
Right.
Like, the people who installed PRISM are the traitors to our country because they're betraying our values. And we let them get away with it because we've stopped articulating our values as Americans because we don't have any common values because we're allowing the siloing of information to take place. We're not engaging with people in our community. And it's just so desperately important that we start talking to each other and having conversations and allowing mm-hmm. other people to disagree with us and having a, you know, like there's things that you've said that you disagree with and probably vice versa on this podcast, but we're going to leave better friends because we had a conversation that connected us, that linked us, as opposed to mm-hmm. Us going, well, he's an idiot, I'm better than him, and, you know, everything I believe is right, and, you know, fuck that guy. You know, it's, and that's kind of what we're doing, and so I think the answer is personal responsibility, and so much
of that.
Yeah, so much of what, like, libertarianism to me is so compatible with my Christianity because, you know, Christ could have forced everybody to be a Christian when he came to earth, and he could have had a military force as the Jews at the time expected, but he chose to persuade people of his values mm-hmm. and look at the movement that he built. And in very much the same way, Americans have to start articulating American values to each other and agreeing on basic principles and not letting and finding it unsuitable when people violate those and stop voting for these people, vote for people that do articulate those values and mm-hmm. and allow people to be persuasive as opposed to using the force of government to win your argument.
Sure. I that's where I agree with you is communicating the ideas, trying to open people's minds and open your mind and listen to other people about what is actually happening with government seems to be a very worthwhile project. I just think you get lost when you get into it and the minutiae of it. But I feel like you can, there's a lot to do to communicate how institutions work, how systems work, how people get villainized that are probably well-meaning and how over-conspiratorial views, you know, make things less believable. Like, there's a lot of communication to be done and listening. It's not just about me telling people what to do. It's just there's a lot of listening and talking to be done from authentic sources And I do believe the world will change out of that, not out of policy. And that's just kind of where I wind up.
Absolutely. I think we have to have a conversation with each other instead of broadcasting to each other. Mm. And it's just, it's incredibly important at this moment in history that we do that. And we have the freedom to do that. And, you know, we don't have this this tyrannical government. If that we did, I wouldn't have a podcast studio in my living room that talks about how much the government sucks.
Yeah.
You know, so we still have the freedom, and we need to maintain that. And it's just vitally important that we stop siloing ourselves off.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Chris, thank you for coming on the show. I want to have you back whenever you want to come back, and we'll talk about like more narrow issues. This is pretty much a groundwork hour we've spent here just to kind of get acquainted, but I'd love to actually objectively look at a topic or an example of something and stick with it for a whole podcast and, you know, walk through it and actually in depth on let's say minimum wage, do that for 45 minutes or something.
Absolutely.
I'd love to do some stuff like that in the future. I've enjoyed talking to you. I'm definitely on your wavelength, and I like your show. I hope that people go check out We Are Libertarian. So
thank you. I appreciate that. And anytime you want me on, I'm happy to be here. I'm a huge fan of what you guys are doing, and thank you for it.
All right. Thank you very much, Chris.
All right. Bye.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.